Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Las Vegas Weekly managing editor Ken Miller. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
So this is obviously a very politically charged time at the moment, leading up to the election and at the movies as well this week with the opening of W, Oliver Stone's biopic on George W. Bush, which was sort of rushed into production, rushed into release. I think they started filming this movie back in May, and it's out now in time for the election. So it's clearly he's trying to capitalize on something and trying to, I guess, I don't know if he's trying to sway people's opinions with this movie.
This could be one of the few movies I've you know, been aware of in recent history where the box office may not be the primary goal. I think his goal was to get this out before the election and that as many people as possible would see this before the election.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of hard to say.
Right. I wonder because it's, you know, you can compare it to something like Fahrenheit 9/11, where clearly that is an advocacy movie where it has a point. And really, that's a movie that is so dated that you almost would never see it again because its purpose was simply to get you to vote against George Bush in 2004. Whereas this movie, even if you see it as this sort of anti-Bush, and I think it's a lot more nuanced than that, but even if you see it as this sort of anti-Bush tirade, you know, we're not voting for or against George Bush, despite what's what, you know, some candidates may say. We're not voting for or against George Bush in this election. And there's one brief shot of John McCain, I think, in the movie where Bush is giving a State of the Union address, and there's a lot of like real news footage where they show various people, including Hillary Clinton and, you know, other political
Nancy
figures.
Nancy Pelosi.
Right. But you do see John McCain briefly. But otherwise, it doesn't seem to me like it really has a direct bearing on who you might vote for in the election. So I wonder if it's as much an artistic statement, at least, as it is a political one.
Well, I got the feeling from watching the film that Oliver Stone might be the most restrained performance from Oliver Stone I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, knowing what I do about his body of work up to this point, I was expecting something a lot more reactionary.
Right.
And I got to be honest, I really like this film.
Yeah.
And despite the subject matter, I mean, I'll make no secret of the fact that, you know, I think George Bush is the worst president the country's ever had.
Okay.
And, you know, thank God that his term is over. I do think that I'd like to have seen this movie about 3 or 4 years ago rather than now.
Yeah.
Only because I think, you know, people would have really benefited from knowing a bit more about him. Although a lot of this film is arguably,
yeah, I think there are a lot of things in
conjecture
here.
Conjecture.
Yeah. Or also things that are fairly well known, things like little Bushisms, you know, phrases that he mispronounced that got, you know, blown up in the media. And I actually would say that I would prefer to have seen this movie maybe 3 or 4 years from now, because one of the issues with it is that it doesn't have any sort of perspective. It doesn't have any sort of closure. I mean, this was pushed out so quickly that there's no end. I mean, George Bush could do the most significant thing of his entire presidency next week, and this movie would not be able to capture it because it's been put out before there's sort of an ending to the story. I mean, even if we're not going to wait for the end of his life, I think at least wait sort of for the end of this most significant portion of his life. And other movies that Oliver Stone has made about historical figures like JFK or Nixon or Born on the 4th of July, obviously he has a lot more time to sort of look back and think about, well, what is the impact and meaning of these things that happened, you know, decades ago?
You and I had spoke directly after watching the movie that, you know, I could not remember the last time I saw a biopic of someone who still has a bearing on my life.
Right.
It's usually a few, either, you know, centuries removed or a few years removed, whatever. And, you know, we were saying that you could watch this movie, go home and see him on the TV announcing a major sweeping reform that, you know, all of a sudden, oh, my view of him has changed a bit.
Right.
So, yeah, it is odd in that sense. You get a very strange sense of watching it. And Josh Brolin is just so on the mark in his performance.
He is very
good. It's actually
yes.
a bit it was a bit unsettling, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think he can pretty much rely on an Oscar nomination come next year.
It's certainly possible, and he does.
The film itself probably will not.
I mean, I think the film has definite flaws to it, but yeah, he does a good job. And I think the tough thing in this film, and some of the actors don't really achieve this, is to get the balance between sort of doing a Saturday Night Live style impersonation and just getting the voice down, and you know, creating a real character. And Brolin does a good job at balancing that. He sounds like Bush, but he seems like a person.
I found myself throughout this movie wondering, because I, like you, was aware of the very quick shooting schedule, wondered what would have been achieved if they'd have given this a bit longer, you know, in terms of the filmmaking process, the acting process. I thought Thandie Newton came across completely just an unlikable character in almost every sense of the word.
Right. She plays Condoleezza Rice.
Not just because she's Condoleezza Rice, but because she's almost like a woman with palsy when she speaks.
Yeah, and it's very distracting. It takes you out of the reality of these scenes. These are serious scenes where they're discussing policy issues and talking about whether or not to invade Iraq and things that are important, and they're not played satirically.
And it's distracting,
right?
When it's delivered in that way,
absolutely. And I did think she was probably the worst, and there are varying degrees of other success. I thought at first Jeffrey Wright, who plays Colin Powell, at first I thought he was a little off, but I kind of warmed to his performance as it went on. And they do a lot with Colin Powell, I think, as a character, and showing how he was at odds with Bush and with Cheney related to the invasion of Iraq. And he's sort of a tragic figure in a way in what he's like forced into there with that situation.
I thought Jeffrey Wright gave a very thoughtful performance.
Yeah.
Although, you know, he is playing Colin Powell, who, you know, really should have been our president. But anyway.
Well, and they mentioned that at one point, you know, that he could have been president.
Yes, very, very funny scene, actually. Yeah. I thought Richard Dreyfuss actually
as Dick Cheney,
gave a lot of body to the character of Dick Cheney, who, you know, up to this point, I think, has been a very black and white figure to a lot of people.
Sure, sure.
Although I found it very interesting how they would occasionally have him sit completely in the dark. Like, you know,
the
Dark Lord and the Revenge of the Jedi. So.
Yes, that is true. Although Karl Rove, I think, does that at a couple points as well. Sits sort of back in the shadows.
Yeah, Karl Rove is this like Rasputin character that's always off on the sides, always kind of popping his head in, you know, at all times. I love the way they did that.
Right. I mean, I think they do make those like Cheney almost is sort of the villain, if you would want to say it, because he is clearly manipulative, you know, and he pushes his own agenda and allows, you know, and Bush sort of allows him to, at least, you know, as portrayed in this movie, allows Cheney and Rove and certain advisors of him to sort of, you know, run over, whereas he's less concerned about what do we do and more concerned about let's get something done. And I think that's one of the personality traits that Stone shows that makes this guy maybe a bad president, but at the same time, you can sort of sympathize with the idea that, you know, he wants to be decisive. He wants to be seen as a person who gets things done. He doesn't want to, you know, be questioned or wonder whether this was right or wrong. And, you know, I think the movie tries to portray that as one of the ways that he's sort of led into making bad decisions, which I thought was interesting.
I think history has shown that to be a great president, it really depends on who you surround yourself with. I mean, rather than just you yourself making the decisions, obviously, the supporting cast is everything in a good administration.
Yeah, no, that is definitely true. And the actors...
There's some construction work going on up
above. There's a bit of noise going on here in the studio. Hopefully we can still be heard.
This might be the GOP's work here.
Yes, exactly. They're trying to disrupt us. But I think that's the message here, that as a person on his own, Bush is sort of lost. And we see a lot of stuff in his early years where he drifts from job to job and he doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. And he deals, I mean, one of the huge things in this movie is his relationship with his father, you know, the first President Bush, played by James Cromwell, who also, I think, does a very good job and is one of those who is not in any way trying to do an impersonation. I mean, he doesn't really, he looks maybe a little like Bush, but he certainly doesn't sound like him.
Right.
But captures a character who I thought came off fairly well. I mean, he's sort of cold. He's not necessarily a great father, but as a politician, he seems like he's very pragmatic and he sticks to things that he believes in. There's one scene where he's being advised to claim to be a born again Christian or sort of advertise his religious views, which younger Bush is more than happy to do. But Bush Senior, he says, you know, that's not me. I'm not going to pander like that. And I thought that was an interesting scene that. Stone maybe doesn't have a lot of respect for W, but seems to have a decent amount of respect for the older George Bush.
Well, I agree. But I would also go so far as to say that he seems to have a modicum of respect for W.
I mean, a little bit at least.
This movie, you know, for better or for worse, actually comes across as a somewhat sympathetic portrait of this man.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was possible going into this movie, but I found myself actually feeling sorry for him.
Sure.
And I kept having to fight that feeling because I was like, wait a minute. No, this is W. Bush we're talking about. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that a lot of conservatives are probably planning on not seeing this movie at all just based on the fact that it's directed by Oliver Stone, that it's a Hollywood product,
sure,
that it's going to be the same slam job that has been done over and over again by the elite media or whatever. But I have a feeling that a lot of people, if they went to see this movie, might have a different opinion afterwards.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wonder if certain conservatives or people who really like George Bush, from our perspective, where we're, maybe thinking of, we think of him so negatively, or we expect such a negative portrait, it's a surprise to say, oh, well, it does have a level of sympathy, or we're able to feel a level of sympathy. But I think if you're coming at it from the other perspective, where you like George Bush and you're supportive of things that he's done, that small level of sympathy maybe wouldn't be enough. I mean, I still think it's an interesting movie and that it's far more than an attack on George Bush, mm-hmm, or a left-wing screed or anything
absolutely
like that.
Absolutely.
But I think if you're looking, it's certainly not a celebration of George Bush or, some sort of deification or anything like that. But I do think Stone has sort of, I don't know if he's softened necessarily, but the last movie he made, World Trade Center, which I thought was actually very bland and was very slick and not personal. It was impersonal, but it was extremely patriotic. And while it didn't take a stand on the war or anything like that, it was all about celebrating the heroism of rescue workers who rescue people on 9/11. And I would think that from a conservative perspective, that movie is 100% easy to support. So I think maybe he's sort of broadening his horizons as he's getting older.
I think so. The only misstep I think in this movie is the I think it's the central part of the film where they're showing what's supposed to be Hardball and they're calling it Spinball.
Right.
And they're showing these talking heads saying these things. And I won't go into detail because I don't want to give away the whole movie, but the things that they're saying are just so absolutely ridiculous that it almost took me out of the movie. I felt like it really wasn't the story of Bush anymore. All of a sudden it had become this like parody of the entire thing,
right.
which is unfortunate because I did not get that sense at any other point in the film.
True.
And there are, again, not giving much up, but there's a lot of humor in this movie.
Yes.
You will laugh. I mean, despite yourself, whether you support him or not, you will laugh at some of the material in this movie. It's very clever. Josh Brolin just incredible job. I have to give him props for this. Yeah. He really nailed it.
Right.
And this is, you may not know this, but one of my pet peeves in biopics, which I generally detest, is that they end up being just kind of a, what do you want to call it, a recreation of the most famous moments.
Sure, like nothing mundane has ever happened.
And the best example I can think of is the Andy Kaufman movie, Man on the Moon.
Right.
I mean, I was looking forward to an examination of the man behind the myth or the myth behind the man or whatever. But all it ended up being was all the material that I was already familiar with, just recreated by a different cast, recreating the moment. And it was empty. It meant nothing to me. And to some degree, this movie does that. But the effect on me wasn't the same. I really did feel like it had more substance than in other movies that have tried to do this.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to describe why I feel that way, but I didn't get that oh brother sense that I have with these other films. I found myself completely swept up in this movie. Really didn't actually want it to end, to be honest.
Wow.
But, I'll stop there because I don't want to effuse too much about a movie that deals with probably the worst president this country's ever had. So,
but it does skip over a lot of what one would think are really important events. I mean, we never see 9/11 and his immediate reaction to it. The vote recount in 2000 in Florida is completely maybe mentioned once or twice. The 2004 election, and it stops, I think, just a little after the 2004 election, I think, is what it would be. I know there are a couple mentions of John Kerry. But we never really see that process either. So it's definitely, I think, a situation where Stone is saying, here's what I think is important. Here's what I'm going to pick out to give you a portrait of this guy as I see him. And it's not necessarily the biggest historical moments that we're thinking of when, you know, when you would write an encyclopedia entry about who is George W. Bush.
Which I thought was the way to go.
Yeah.
And again, going back to how restrained Oliver Stone is, also one of his shorter films.
I think this just clocked
in at just a bit over 2 hours.
Right, right.
And I'm used to sitting in an Oliver Stone movie and having a sore bum at the end.
Yes.
I mean, he really likes to go into detail.
Right.
And I felt that he really, you know, pulled together a very concise, tight, you know, well-edited, well-done movie.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Given the time frame, I mean, maybe they should put him on a quicker shooting schedule every time, you know?
That's true, that's true. And I, you know, unlike you, I don't think I felt like, I think at the end I felt like it was done. You know, I don't think I would have liked there to be more of it. But I did think it kept things going. It was entertaining. And I wasn't checking my watch towards the end. I felt like it ended at the right moment. Mm-hmm. And one thing I would mention, that going back to sort of the briefness of the schedule maybe, or like you were talking about with that fake hardball show, things that sort of take you out of the movie, there's a part when there is a part where he's giving a State of the Union address, as I mentioned before, when they show John McCain, and a part where they sort of try and recreate the mission accomplished. And it's a lot of mixing the actors with this real news footage that, to me, it was a little awkward green screening effect where it sort of, again, takes you out of it and makes it almost look more like a Saturday Night Live sketch. And there were moments like that where I thought maybe if they had taken more time, they could have either made it look better or they could have recreated the whole thing themselves and things like that. Like, definitely this movie is, I mean, at least as far as I'm concerned, you know, is not perfect. It makes definite missteps that I think probably could have been rectified if they had taken more time.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, it was certainly better than I thought. But I think there are, you know, clear moments where I was like, oof, I really wish they hadn't done that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought the recreation moments were, they were passable, but they weren't, they didn't blow you away.
Right.
I mean, I think a lot of that probably had to do with the fact they didn't have a lot of time to get it into the theater. They probably don't have a lot of time to tweak it based on audience response
exactly.
either.
Right.
So, I mean, what we saw is probably what everyone else is going to see,
I'm sure. Oh, of course.
You know, I said, go in with an open mind. Try not to, you know, expect, you know, the next year's Oscar winner.
No.
And you're probably going to really enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I think people will enjoy it and that it's far more fair and, you know, fair and balanced, as one might say, than I think that you would, that you know, either liberals or conservatives would expect. So I gave this 3 stars in my review. Like I said, I think it has flaws, but it's an interesting film. I don't know. You sound like you'd probably give it a higher rating.
I would actually go so far as to give it 4.
Wow.
I really appreciated this movie.
Yeah.
I would go see it again. I've already recommended it to a couple of people I know. Mm. And, you know, I look at it as a movie. I don't look at it as
a support or a
slamming of Bush. I just look at it as a very well-made movie. Stone has still got it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's definitely more so than that, than something like a documentary where it's more partisan. So on a completely different note, also opening this week, a movie that I know you haven't seen, but I unfortunately have, is the teen sex comedy Sex Drive.
Sometimes you have to take one for the team.
Exactly,
Josh.
Exactly. Well, I often do. And unfortunately, this movie actually has gotten a number of positive reviews, which sort of appalls me. And I'm not particularly inclined to like this sort of vulgar, broad comedy that this movie represents. But I do, I think, like those movies when they're done well. I like the Harold and Kumar movies, for example, or the first American Pie. And this movie, or Superbad, which came out last year, that was very entertaining. This movie is about a high school student who is chatting, has been chatting online with this girl, or what he believes is a girl at least, you know, who offers to have sex with him if he'll drive. And it's like halfway, I think they drive from like Chicago to Nashville or something like that, if they drives to meet her. And so he decides to go.
This sounds like the plot of The Sure Thing.
Exactly. It is the plot of The Sure Thing, which was a 80s movie with John Cusack. And but this is much, much more crude, I think, than that. And he ends up taking his friend along, as well as his female friend, who, of course, you know, he's secretly in love with. And over the course of this road trip, they'll have to realize their love for each other. And then he'll have to understand that he should value a potential relationship with her over this random skank who has said that she will have sex with him. And along the way, they get into all sorts of really, really gross situations involving bodily fluids and a sarcastic Amish guy played by Seth Green, which is a gag that just goes on and on and on and does not work. They have a concert by Fall Out Boy in the Amish settlement for some reason. But this was a movie that
kind of
was
kind of like Blues Traveler in Kingpin. Anyway.
Yes. Just like that. And this is a movie that I think I was like cringing the entire time as I was watching this movie, just waiting for it to be over. And I just think it's painfully unfunny. And movies like Superbad or American Pie are crude. They're funnier than this movie, but I think also they have an underlying reality to them that you can feel for these characters even as they go through these absurd and humiliating situations and care about. Are the guy and the girl going to get together? What's going to happen for them next in their lives as they go on to this next phase? They go on to college or they grow up or whatever.
This movie is just bereft of that.
Yeah, it's completely bereft of that. The acting is completely mediocre. I didn't care about the characters. So I would say, you know, there's a movie out right now, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is much less crude, but also about teenagers falling in love that is much more real, much more entertaining. And I would say go see that. That's a good movie and certainly do not.
As soon as I saw him driving a Yugo, I said, I've got to see this movie.
That's a fun movie. And that also is very conventional. It's predictable. And it even has some gross out moments, which I wasn't that crazy about. But overall, it's much more well made and much easier to care about the characters and, you know, feel for them when they fall in love. So don't see Sex Drive. See Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist instead.
Kind of surprising that a movie like that would come out this late in the year. Wouldn't that typically be a summer?
It seems like an August, September kind of release. There's a movie called College that seemed like a similar sort of thing that came out towards the end of August. But this was pushed a little, and I'm not sure. Maybe they decided it's an alternative. You know, teenagers are not going to go see W this weekend probably, although they will go see.
Even though they should.
Right. Well, yeah. So this might be an alternative for them.
Sorry, I had to get a little preachy there.
So. No, that's okay. Hey, you know, and I think it's not a preachy movie, W. So, you know, teenagers who went to see it, they might actually enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. More so, hopefully, than at Sex Drive, or we can weep for the future of America. So coming up on DVD this coming Tuesday is another biopic about a misguided figure. It's The Incredible Hulk. Reboot of the superhero franchise, which was made into a movie in 2003 by Ang Lee, which was sort of a mixed success. Actually made about as much money, I think, at the box office as this new version did, and has got a lot of critical reappraisal, I think, since it came out. And I actually thought it was fairly decent, although flawed. But this new version, directed by Louis Leterrier, I think is how you pronounce it, a French director who directed the Transporter movies, is much more action-oriented and much less arty and introspective. Stars Edward Norton as the scientist who, when he gets angry, you know, you wouldn't like him when he's angry, and he turns into the big green Hulk and has to fight some dudes and et cetera. And I thought this movie...
Pursued by General Arm Brewster and loved by Betsy Ross. Betty Ross.
Betty Ross, yeah, not Betsy Ross.
Not American Flag, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I did not like this movie. I will say, I was hoping for something, and I liked Iron Man, which came out over the summer, and were sort of the new envisioning that Marvel has for their superheroes. And I thought Iron Man was fun, it was entertaining, and it was, you know, action packed and all that stuff. And this movie, I thought the story never. never got going. I remember sitting there like an hour into the movie thinking like, well, what is this movie about? He just kind of runs and runs and runs. And I know that that's the old Incredible Hulk TV series, which they've taken a lot from, was what it was about. But the Hulk is trying to break into the studio at the moment, I think. Hopefully we can still be heard. I just thought this movie was incredibly dull, and it was a disappointment because I love Edward Norton. I think he's a really good actor, and they could have done something with this character, and they really didn't. So I don't know what your opinion was.
Well, I mean, I come from a background where I read the Hulk comic books as a kid. I mean, I probably have still quite a few of them in my closet somewhere. And the basic storyline of Hulk, it doesn't move much over the course of the series. I mean, right. You know, Banner tries to live a normal life, becomes angry, you know, latest villain shows up, Hulk you know, beats him and moves on. And as the comic book evolved, I think the comic book writers realized that they were hitting a dead end. So they eventually had the Hulk talk,
right?
Completely normal as a normal person, to kind of, you know, evolve the series. And that actually was when I stopped reading, because it really ceased to become interesting for me. So from a purely basic, like, you know, going back to my roots type of feeling, I actually, unlike you, I actually appreciated this one more than the first one, because I thought the first one I didn't like was because they really deviated from the origin of the Hulk.
That's
true. That really ruined it for me. I don't know why they couldn't have just stuck with the script, so to speak. But I thought this most recent one, from an action standpoint, was pretty serviceable to how it was in the comic books. And I thought the first chase scene in South America was very well done.
That was well done.
I mean, yeah. I found myself thinking, actually, I forgot I was watching a Hulk movie for a while. I was like, this is a very exciting.
Almost like the Bourne movies or something.
Exactly. And then, of course, the Hulk takes over, and there's, you know, there's actually some, surprisingly to me, gruesome violence in this movie when Tim Roth is attacked. I thought that was, from a kid standpoint, I thought it was surprisingly violent. Right. I was actually surprised.
It was, yeah.
I mean, I guess if you're a fan of the comic books, I would say check out the second one. If you're not really into superhero movies, this isn't going to convert you. I mean, it's basically what it is advertised as. Bruce Banner becomes Hulk. Hulk smashes, goes back to being Bruce Banner, and you know, the world's saved.
I just thought that was incredibly and the villain, the Tim Roth character,
no pun intended,
is not suitably villainous, I think, till towards the end of the movie. And then one of my pet peeves with movies is that at the very end of this movie, and I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say that Tim Roth also turns into a sort of monstrous type character.
Right.
And the Hulk and the Abomination, as they call him, they have to fight. And so the entire climax is two pieces of CGI fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And there's no, like, real weight to it. I mean, obviously all this stuff is fake anyway, and lots of stunts are done with computers. But to me, I just felt like I had no investment in this sort of bits of computer animation going at each other. And so I don't know. I mean, I think the Ang Lee film had a lot of flaws, and I wouldn't say, oh, you should run out and rent that movie, because I think it had a lot of issues to it, certainly. And it also has a finale that's very confusing and much less action-oriented than in this movie. But I just think they had a chance to do something, and they really, I don't know, I think they dropped the ball. And Iron Man goes back to the sort of simple, basic origins of what that character is, and I thought it worked well.
A much more compelling storyline, too, just from the personality standpoint.
Right. And at the end of this movie, Robert Downey Jr. shows up as Tony Stark, the Iron Man character, because, of course, they're trying to connect all these Marvel superhero movies together. Which is intriguing.
And I wonder how they're going to, you know, wrap this all up.
I think it could be cool. They have a bunch more coming out in the next few years, and if they do it well, it could be really interesting. But I think while I was watching just this movie in particular, when he showed up, all it did was remind me about how much more I liked Iron Man and how I wished he had been in the movie the whole time.
And speaking of CGI in this new Hulk, who could have really used it was William Hurt, because his makeup as General Armbruster is just awful. I mean, it's just appalling. Every time he was on screen, I was just like, okay, enough. Move it out of the frame.
So some issues. I don't know. My recommendation on DVD this week would be, this coming Tuesday, would be The Strangers, which is a horror movie that was... it was actually fairly successful, I think more so than people expected that it would be. It's a very simple, basic premise. Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman play a couple. They're in a sort of isolated house, and some people, the strangers...
Come in and make a lot of noise.
Exactly. Who show up, these sort of masked, mysterious people, and start menacing them. And it's one of those movies where you never really find out why or what's going on. There really isn't much more to it than, like, bad people show up and bad things happen. But it's very visceral, and it keeps you on edge, and it's just very well constructed.
This is one of those films that I did not get to see, but I definitely want to see. I'm a fan of these type of films. But it sounds similar to Funny Games to me.
Yeah, Funny Games, the Michael Haneke movie that came out earlier in the year, which was sort of a deconstruction of this kind of movie. And Haneke's, I think, perspective in Funny Games is that you shouldn't glorify or you shouldn't revel in the violence of these kind of movies. You shouldn't enjoy yourself while you're watching them. And The Strangers is really the kind of movie that he's critiquing, because it is just about the violence, the sort of visceral reaction that you get to it, and there's nothing more to it. But I really liked Funny Games, but for the visceral reaction that it produced. And I think this is similarly producing that sort of, you know, basic fear, without, excitement
without
response.
Winking at without, the audience.
Without, exactly. Without winking at the audience. And I think I liked Funny Games more, but the winking at the audience aspect of Funny Games I was not that enamored of. But The Strangers is good. Definitely, I would say rent that this coming week. And go see W. You know, if you if you're skeptical, I think, you know, you could be won over by it.
I definitely agree. I take it from someone who is probably the least biggest, you know, fan of George W. Bush. Go see this. I mean, I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Ken Miller, thank you very much for joining me. And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell. Tune in next week.
Josh Bell hates everything
except me.